Welcome to Ask the Experts, a monthly podcast taking on the latest questions around healthcare legislation and compliance.
Welcome to today's episode of Ask the Experts. With us today is Shelley Bloom, Director of Legislative Awareness and Training. Before we begin today's podcast, I would like to read the following disclaimer. This podcast is designed to highlight various employee benefit matters of general interest to our listeners. It is not intended to interpret laws or regulations or to address specific client situations. You should not act or rely on any information contained herein without seeking the advice of an attorney or tax professional. Hello, Shelley. Here is my first question. Is an employer allowed to remove employees from the group health plan once they become Medicare eligible?
Hello, Jim. The answer to that is a definite no. The employer needs to follow the rules for the Medicare secondary payer. If an employer has 20 or more total employees, then the group health plan is primary. An employer cannot incentivize the Medicare eligible employees to move away from the group health plan.
A group has 20 or more employees in a year and is subject to federal COBRA. The next year, they have fewer than 20 and must offer mini COBRA or state continuation. What happens to the people that were on federal COBRA?
That's a pretty easy one. The people that were on federal COBRA will remain. Whatever they were offered on their termination date is what they continue to be in. So if somebody was on for 7 months and the group is now less than 20, they're still going to stay on that federal COBRA and be eligible for the 18 months, even though those that are eligible after the mini COBRA or state continuation eligibility, it may be a shorter amount based on the state where the employee lives.
Does the affordability test apply to a small group, fewer than 50 employees?
From the group perspective, this answer is no. An employer needs to have 50 or more full-time equivalent employees to be subject to the offering of at least 95% of the full-time employees that get coverage that is minimum essential, minimum value, and affordable. So if you are a group that has fewer than 50, you are not an applicable large employer. You are not subject to the affordability test. You do not need to use the 30 hours per week or 130 hours a month. You can use measurement different periods that will apply to your group that could be more than the 30 hours as long as you are under 50.
What happens to an employee who has been full-time for years and recently moved to part-time hours? We have more than 50 full-time equivalent employees and are ALE.
So this is a group that is an applicable large employer. They have been large, it sounds like, for a period of time. So an employee who has been full-time does have the offer of coverage, and let's say that they enroll at the renewal period, and then they move to part-time hours. So now they're only working 15 hours a week instead of their usual 30 to 35 hours a week. Because they earned that opportunity to be offered coverage looking backward, that's the look-back measurement period, they must get that offer of coverage for that full stability period, which is usually the same as the plan year. So that person who had been full-time for many years, the next year, right after the renewal, they drop down to part-time hours, they still will have the opportunity to keep their insurance, to be on as a full-time employee. They will be measured at the next administrative period or open enrollment period to determine what they worked and if they will be eligible going forward or not.
Can an employer choose to contribute 100% of the cost for salaried employees, 80% of the cost for hourly employees?
Yes, this is something that the DOL does allow. You can have different contributions based on a bona fide class description. So certainly salary and hourly employees are bona fide class descriptions, But in this particular example, you need to be cautious about discrimination. By choosing to contribute 100% of the cost for the salaried, who likely make more than those who are hourly and have to pay more, that looks like it might be discrimination for those who earn more or your highly compensated employees. So you have to take a look at that non-discrimination test for highly compensated employees to determine if you're meeting that as well before you go ahead with this kind of a contribution schedule.
Can an employer have a qualified high-deductible health plan, offer an HSA, and an HRA at the same time?
So this is a tricky one, and it's important to work with your administrator for your health reimbursement arrangement or your health savings account if you want to do this. But the answer is yes. An employer can offer the qualified high-deductible health plan, and then the employee would need to meet that minimum deductible under their high deductible health plan, which for 2024 is $1,600 for a single, $3,200 for a family. So once that single person met their $1,600 deductible that they paid, then the employer could say post-deductible or anything over that $1,600, an HRA could take care of that. So that would be employer dollars that would pay for any copay, coinsurance, deductible, or whatever amounts the employer has put in that plan document for the HRA to allow the employees to take advantage of that. But they must meet that HSA deductible first.
Can an ex-spouse and ex-stepchildren remain on the health plan after the divorce?
No, they cannot. They are eligible for COBRA. So at the point that their health insurance terminates because they are no longer an eligible dependent, the spouse or the children, they would be offered the COBRA plan. But in most cases, they are not able to stay on the plan. I will caution that there is at least one state that I'm aware of that does require, in the case of a divorce, for a spouse to keep the other former spouse on the plan for a period of time, but in most states, the answer is no.
If an employer has both union and non-union employees, and the union employees get their benefits from the union, how does the employer count to determine whether or not they are an ALE?
The employer needs to count all of his employees. So if there are union employees that get their insurance somewhere else, there's employees that do sales, there's employees that do payroll or administration. They are all employees. They all get their paycheck from the employer, so they must be counted. This is one that trips up a lot of employer groups because they think if the union provides the insurance, I don't have to count them. But yes, you do. They still are employees.
Thank you for listening. Please join us next month for another edition of Ask the Experts.